Hey campers, welcome to Camp Kaiju. I'm your host Vincent, and I want to thank you for being here week after week, whether you hang out with me live or you catch the videos the next day. I want to say thank you. I also want to say thank you for just following the Instagram channel. I want to say thank you if you check out the Letterboxd. I want to say thank you if you've actually looked at the t-shirt link in the bio. And I really want to thank you if you have gone ahead and purchased one of those t-shirts. They look really good, right? Thank you. All this is coming from, well, hey, what do you know? It is Thanksgiving week. And I want to say that tonight is special because I'm calling it the finale of my season one of Camp Kaiju. I've been doing these videos, if not live, at least pre-recorded, once a week now since February or so. Either way, it's been a blast. I'm taking the holidays off from the videos, at least. I'm going to not only, I guess, take a vacation, whatever that means, but sort of retool, take this time to chart a course for the new year. I really want to come at you with more sort of quality over quantity. I want to have a full-time guest host. I want to offer a little bit more from Camp Kaiju, and I just need to take a month to sort of figure out those details. But it's going to be worth it. I'm sharing that with you right here, right now. So stay tuned on all of those previous accounts that I mentioned. Especially, I want to say that I have taken all of these videos and I have put them on podcast feeds now. So if that is how you'd prefer to get your Kaiju content, by all means, follow Camp Kaiju, Spotify. I'm pretty sure we're on Apple. But wherever you podcast, search Camp Kaiju and give us a follow and enjoy like close to 40 past episodes. It's a journey, right? You know, I really learned along the way doing this show, sort of what worked, what didn't work, but there's a whole bunch of content there to explore. Get you ready for season two, and then you'll be in the right place at the right time every week. Either here on Instagram or on your podcasts. Yeah. So, many thanks. Now, tonight's featured movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Downright Campy, when it comes to 1968's Destroy All Monsters, a Godzilla movie from Toho Studios. There's a lot to talk about with this one. I thought it would be a perfect last hurrah for season one of Camp Kaiju because Toho viewed it as the last hurrah of their Showa era Godzilla pictures. We know in hindsight that wasn't the case, but certainly in 1968, Toho threw everything they had into this movie and offering us here now a lot to dive into. So, directed by Ishiro Honda. He's back he'd taken a little bit of a hiatus from earlier entries, so he's back. Aiji Tsuburaya, you know, he's there, right-hand man. And Akira Ifukube is back helming the score of this picture. Now, these three, they'd been working together since 1954's Gojira, so they're sort of the dream team. They basically worked on every single Godzilla, most every other kaiju movie, or Toho, tokusatsu, science fiction movie. Like, they were it. Before preceding Destroy All Monsters, you know, they kind of took a little break. They ventured into some other projects. Jun Fukuda, the other notable Showa-era Godzilla director, he directed some preceding Godzilla flicks. And Toho was like, you know what? This is going to be the last one. Let's bring back the A-Squad and let's do it right. And boy, did they? They threw so much money at this movie. Again, you have to compare it to the preceding two Godzilla movies, which were Son of Godzilla and Ebera, Horror of the Deep. The one right before Ebera was Invasion of Astro Monster. So if you think about your Godzilla catalog, you can see, okay, Invasion of Astro Monster, we've got King Ghidorah, we've got Rodan, we're on the moon. There's a lot of moving pieces. And then you go into Ebera and Son of Godzilla, which are way scaled back in terms of set pieces. They feature island locations. They feature very, very sort of basic, more simple type creatures, right? Think of your giant bugs, Komanga, or obviously Ebera, a giant lobster. So not very like inspired monsters, right? Now we have Destroy All Monsters. This came out of Toho's, they're looking at their bottom line and they're seeing that since Invasion of Astro Monster, each Godzilla movie has been losing money. So by the mid to late 60s, the kaiju genre was definitely waning with Japanese audiences. Toho saw the writing on the wall. They're like, you know what? Let's just call it. It's been a good run, guys, but we're going to go out on top. And what makes... So some things that make Destroy All Monsters notable, aside from the creative team. We are back to cityscapes. Good old-fashioned, let's destroy Tokyo scenes. We are back with science fiction. We have good old-fashioned aliens coming down to Earth to wreak havoc. We are back to the moon. Hey, that's always fun. And we're back to our lovable, you know them, you cherish them roster of kaiju characters. Mothra, Rodan, King Ghidorah, Anguirus making his first appearance since Godzilla raids again back in 1955. So you've got those four. At the time, they were the big four. Then you've got kaiju who had never appeared in a Godzilla film, but their own separate kaiju movies. Manda, who appeared in Atragon. You have Varan from Varan the Unbelievable. You have Baragon from Frankenstein Conquers the World. And you do have Minya, aka Manila, the son of Godzilla. So up until 1968, it really was basically all of Toho's kaiju monsters. Sans, Gaira, and Sanda from War of the Gargantuas, and King Kong, unfortunately. I did read that by 68, the rights, Toho's license rights to Kong had expired, so that was a bummer. I'm not sure why the Gargantuas didn't make an appearance. I think they would have been a little out of place with the more, like, dinosaur-esque kaiju that Toho has. Either way, I'll get to that later on. I want to go into the cast a little bit. We have Akira Kubo. He was in Matango. He was in Invasion of Astro Monster and a Son of Godzilla. So now he's back. We have Jun Tazaki. He was in War of the Gargantuas and Ebera. Yukiko Kobayashi as Kyoko Manabe, Yoshio Tsuchiya as Invasion of Astro Monster. I'm getting carried away with these Japanese pronunciations. Yoshio Tsuchiya was in Invasion of Astro Monsters. I wish I could like show you pictures of these guys because I don't know if I'm doing their names any sort of justice, but I think I'm getting better. Either way, the last actor I want to feature is Kyoko Ya. She plays the Queen of the Kilax. And yeah, so that's where we're at with the creative team, with the concept, with the sort of the cultural context of Destroy All Monsters, and the cast featuring some Toho regulars and some newbies who brought a lot to the table. So now I'm going to go into the synopsis of the movie just real quick, just so you kind of know what the heck I'm talking about. There will be spoilers if you are interested. Okay, so at the close of the 20th century, the year is 1999, and we are partying like it. All of Earth's kaiju have been collected by the United Nations Science Committee and confined in an area known as Monsterland, one of those glorious lost islands, land before times that feature so wonderfully in kaiju movies. Think Skull Island, think Infant Island. So now we have Monsterland. And it is a special control center. There's a special control center constructed underneath the island to ensure that the monsters stay secure and to serve as a research facility to study them. I was watching Destroy All Monsters, and this made me think about that island in Godzilla versus Kong, where they have Kong kept in captivity with like that sort of manufactured biosphere. It's kind of like that, sort of like a, you know, the 1968 version. However, when communication with Monsterland is suddenly and mysteriously severed, all of the monsters begin attacking world capitals. Rodan is in Moscow, Mothra is screwing up Beijing, Godzilla is in New York City, which, heck, I haven't seen since 98's Godzilla, if you can call that Godzilla, but our classic Godzilla is in New York, and it's awesome, and he blows up the United Nations building, and you wonder if that's like, you know, what kind of political context is Honda going for there, that old so-and-so. So, to continue, the United Nations orders Captain Yamabe and a crew of his spaceship to investigate Monsterland. There, they discover that the scientists have become mind-controlled slaves of a feminine alien race identifying themselves as the Kelex, who reveal they are in control of the monsters. Their leader demands that the human race surrender or face total annihilation. Classic stuff. So, like I said, the monsters are wrecking the cities of the world. The attacks are set in motion to draw attention away from Japan so that the aliens can establish an underground stronghold near Mount Fuji in Japan. And that'll pay off in the end there. So now the Kelex then turn their next major attack onto Tokyo, and without serious opposition become arrogant in their aims until the UN discovers, after recovering the Kelex monster mind control devices from around the world, they have switched to broadcasting the control signals from their base under the moon's surface. In a desperate battle, the crew of the spaceship destroys the Kelex lunar outpost and returns the alien control system to Earth. Let me just simplify that for you. The Kelex have hidden mind control devices around the world. The human UN research astronaut scientist team find them and destroy them. So now the Kelex have lost control of the monsters. Now the UN has control of the monsters. And the Kelex call on King Ghidorah, kind of their ace up their sleeve. The three-headed space dragon is dispatched to protect the alien stronghold on Mount Fuji and battles Godzilla, Manila, Mothra, Rodan, Gorosaurus, apologies to Gorosaurus fans out there for forgetting him, Anguirus, and Kamonga. Likewise. While seemingly invincible, King Ghidorah is eventually overpowered by the combined strength of the Earth monsters and is killed. Now, refusing to admit defeat, the Kelex produce their ace, a burning monster they call the Fire Dragon, which begins to torch Tokyo and destroys the control center on the island. Suddenly, Godzilla attacks and destroys the Kelex underground base, revealing that the Earth's monsters instinctively know who their enemies are. Captain Yamabe then pursues the Fire Dragon it narrowly achieves victory for the human race.
Woo!
The fire dragon is revealed to be a flaming Keelak saucer and destroyed. With the Keelak defeated, Godzilla and the other monsters eventually return to Monsterland to live in peace. Now, friends, I'm going to take a quick time out. My dog here, my kaiju buddy, is wanting to just get out of the office. She's tired of my ramblings. So just let me do that real quick. For those of you listening in on the podcast, I hope that was enjoyable. My dog, since you can't see her, is brown with big, beautiful brown eyes. Good girl. Okay, so now, Destroy All Monsters was released on October 1st, 1968 in Japan. Like I said, while it has become a favorite among fans these days, back then it was not the hit that Toho was hoping for. So a bit of a bummer there. I think that probably speaks more to, again, just sort of a genre fatigue than issues with the movie. You know what I mean? So what's my personal history with the film? Well, like a lot of these old kaiju movies, they weren't available to me growing up. I was born in 91. These movies were not available on home video until, I don't know, honestly, even like the past 10 years. I mean, you could get them on VHS, or you can go to your video rental store. Yeah, aging myself there. But Destroy All Monsters was never at the Video King or the Blockbuster. So I like knew of it. I knew there was a Godzilla movie out there where they all teamed up. Like sometimes Sci-Fi Channel would run some marathons, but I never really saw it honestly until just a few years ago, when the Criterion Channel, I discovered their streaming service. Instantly signed up for that. I binged watched the entire Showa era, and I love this one. I revisited it obviously for this episode. Oh yeah, it's great. I'll get into some details in just a second. Oh, here we go. We're right on cue. So with the good, the bad, and the downright campy with Destroy All Monsters. Again, spoiler alert, but you gotta know. So with the good, the production design of this film is meticulous. The special effects and the miniature work on like the cities, they're, like I said, they're so detailed. They're so vibrant in color. Just a knockout job constructing that kind of stuff. It's a real feast for the eyes. The score from Ifukube is dynamic, riveting, and bombastic. From the title card, it really grabs you by the throat and doesn't let you go. Love the score. The concept is really interesting. Like, this hadn't been done before. Something like you're combining all of your characters from across different films. That sounds familiar, right? The Keelaks, I think, really make for interesting but memorable villains. Not only are they presenting as females, which I find really interesting, you know, maybe the decision there for Honda, you know, the movie's set in 1999. Is he saying that maybe in the future, women can have roles as world conquerors, as leaders? You know, certainly we wish that was true in 1968. I would say it was more so in 1999. I'd say it's even more so now. So very forward thinking, I thought, in that regard. So not only does that make the Keelaks interesting, but that's not their real form. That's just how they present to the Earthlings. When a Keelak is, let's just say, killed, for lack of a better word, they become really gross little slug creatures. Like, they're slimy and they're gross. And it's awesome. And it's like, oh, that's your real form. Ooh. Give you shivers. Which is a slug movie, I think. Don't quote me on that. Oh my gosh. So in this movie, not only is the monster action, you know, really worth your while, the human story is a real mystery and it's very compelling. But there are surprisingly graphic shootouts between the good guys and the bad guys, like gunfights, and there's blood. I mean, it's like 1960s, you know, type of G-rated blood, but like a guy gets shot in the forehead. There's a part where the girlfriend of the main dude, she is being mind controlled as well by the Kelax. The Kelax have put a mind control device in her earrings. Her boyfriend, the lead scientist, he realizes this. He takes the earrings and rips them off. And there's blood everywhere. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Did you have to just like rip her ears? Surely there must have been an easier way to remove an earring from an earlobe. No? All right, it's your movie. The stakes are high. It was actually a little bit of a turnoff as even though I'm describing it in a really awesome sense, I was like, it took me out of the story just a little bit. But hey, it's unique for sure. In the bad category, and I say bad with air quotation marks, the Rodan suit is... Like, I'm going to pick on Rodan. Rodan looks rough. The suit is in need of some love. I read that Godzilla and Anguirus were the only two kaiju with new suits built for this movie. They look fantastic. The other monsters, it's like, oh, you were kind of... Clearly that suit was on a shelf in storage. Could have used some TLC. The final rumble, the battle royale, the fight, the scene you come to this movie to watch, where 10 freaking kaiju gang up on King Ghidorah. It is it's a highlight of the Godzilla franchise. It is certainly the highlight of this movie. However, it leaves you wanting more. And that's not, you know, it. What can I say? I'm just going to go for it. Mothra is presented throughout this movie in larval form. Man, you sure wish they had dug out that old Mothra prop from storage, because it's like a movie without a flying Mothra. Is it really Mothra? Really? Let's be honest. King Ghidorah shows up. He doesn't really do a whole lot, and there's a very obvious reason for that. By 68, Toho had not established a rogues gallery for Godzilla. You had King Ghidorah. That was it. Mechagodzilla was not until the next decade. Ghidorah, the same. And Gigan as well. So they were a few years off from like having true villains. Because if this movie was made today, you know King Ghidorah would have any combination of those three in line with him, and that would have made it a more fair fight. Because in Destroy All Monsters, one villain against 10 heroes, it's not a fair fight. It's rather anticlimactic and ends rather quickly. However, there's a little asterisk on that. The fight ultimately comes down to Godzilla, Minya, Anguirus, and Gorosaurus. Where are the other ones, you ask? I don't know. That's what I was asking. You had Mothra and Kamunga like shooting their web. That was fine. Rodan shows up and then he leaves. You don't really see him again. Maybe they were strategically not putting him on camera based on the condition of the suit. But, you know, Manda, Varen, Barragon, honestly, aren't in this movie. If you're hoping, Manda is, and Manda has one really killer scene where he's ransacking a city. But when it comes to, by and large, you know, what a newcomer might find interesting about this movie is to see those lesser known kaiju in it. Well, don't get your hopes up. Honestly, there's like one or two shots of those three monsters. And it's just like, I wish there was more. Varen is a really cool kaiju who deserved more than his one standalone film. Barragon, same way. I could make another podcast episode about the underrepresentation of certain kaiju and the overrepresentation of others in Toho films. Like, you know, I'm not going to go there. I think you know what I'm saying. I just wanted more. And ultimately, that's my one little complaint. Poor me. But no, it's a fantastic fight scene and well worth viewing. As for the downright campy, there is, God, I just have to compare it to the Avengers. We're building anticipation for this climactic final fight on Mount Fuji. You know Godzilla's there. You know Anguirus is there. There's news reporters. They're on the mountain. They're waiting for the monsters. The air is quiet. The landscape is still. You're totally expecting Godzilla to like turn around the corner, roar in victory, and like maybe do a fun, like he is the king. When the moment comes, who should turn the corner but Minya, Manila, the son of the big G, and he's fist pumping, he is ready, he's like, yo Adrian, let's go. And you're like, oh my God, I didn't even know Minya was in this movie. And now he's in the fight? Oh, this movie keeps him under wraps. You don't know he's in it until go time, baby. And I just had to think it was like in Avengers Endgame, when a certain someone shows up and right at the final battle, and everyone's like, what? This was that moment. And I have to believe that audiences at the time viewing Destroy All Monsters, who've been with this franchise for 14 years, like talk about an Avengers style moment. This is it. They're assembled. They're fighting the big bad. And Minya enters the room. And you're like, I don't know if I love this or hate this, but either way, in the moment, it's fabulous and you love it. Yeah, you gotta love it. It's really, really good. So yeah, there's my good, the bad, and the downright campy as I saw it with Destroy All Monsters. I'm gonna ask you some questions. I wanna know what you agree with me on. I want to know what you disagree with me on. I want to know who you wanted in this fight. I want to know who you wanted more of in this fight. Are you a fan of the Gargantua brothers? Do you wish they were in there? Could you really not care about Minya and wish he never ever showed up again? Are you a sleeper Ebera fan and somehow feel like a giant lobster could have made Destroy All Monsters even better? Let me know. No judgment here. All strange beasts welcome at Camp Kaiju. So, with that, yeah, man, Destroy All Monsters is a classic. It's, despite that underrepresentation of certain kaiju, the film, the production design is seamless. It has a legitimately interesting human story, which is very rare. And it's a perfect, and it supports the kaiju action. It complements it perfectly. So do yourself a favor, check out Destroy All Monsters. Do yourself an even better favor, watch some of the preceding films. Go Avenger style, like start with 54, go through Godzilla Raids again, go through all of the science fiction stuff. You can skip Ebera, but do watch Son of Godzilla and then watch Destroy All Monsters. It'll make the film that much more special, enjoyable, and really, really fun. Friends, thank you so much for hanging out. I want you to share this with your friends, with your enemies, whoever you have in your life who you think also enjoys monster movies, kaiju movies. Like, engage, follow on Instagram, Letterboxd. I'm gonna have links to those or whatever, more info in the description here. Check out some t-shirts. We have some really cool designs. The link for that is in the bio here. I'm wearing one of them right now. This is the logo for Camp Kaiju. And like I said, check out the podcast wherever you pod. Catch up on past episodes and stay tuned. In just a few weeks, I'm going to announce a full-time guest host and what we have in store for the new year. 'Cause we ain't even scratched the surface yet of all things monster movies. Thank you all. Have a good night, and until next time, stay campy.